church and society, and on what we all think is the appropriate role of the church in society, which I think is a more complicated question than might appear on the surface. I think I'll start out with a few comments, and then I want to ask you folks for some of your ideas about some of this before I tell anything about what the ELCA does or thinks is the right thing. First of all, I'd like to say that that my path to leadership in the ELCA, I'm the chair of a national church board now, the Division for Church and Society, which is an enormous board. We have to do with the church's use of or administration of our hospitals, all the Lutheran hospitals, nursing homes, adoption agencies, social service agencies, all the LSSs all over, all the immigration and refugee work of the church, which is in itself an enormous thing. The church's hunger funds, the hunger monies are 15% of the entire budget of the ELCA. We share the administration of hunger monies with another unit in the church, but we have a lot.
Can you talk just a little louder?
I'll try. Do you know that we have the
hearing? Yeah, but it doesn't help very much.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have a quiet voice too, but I'll try. So it's a big division, and it also does the sort of theoretical work for the church in that it writes social statements, this unit. So Caring for Creation, Vision, Hope, and Justice, the new statement on race, ethnicity, and culture, there's abortion, a call to deliberate, there's a new statement on the environment that I'm going to be presenting at the churchwide assembly this summer. I'm also going to be presenting the one on race, ethnicity, and culture. 2 years from now, we put out the study document on human sexuality that certainly some of you have run across. And 2 years from now, we're going to try to come to consensus on that and see if the churchwide assembly will accept it. So there's a lot of theoretical work that this unit does. So you might wonder, and I think it's instructive in a way, how a person like me ends up being chair of this board. And I think that there are two paths that got me there. One was a personal spiritual journey, and the other is a political journey. And in the church, you have to do both. I left the church for quite a long time after college. I was raised a Lutheran and baptized and confirmed and went to a Lutheran college. And then left the church, actually probably during my college years, for maybe 10 years, and was very, very disaffected. And I think the reasons for that are probably a different session, but they have to do mainly with the fact that as a woman, I felt that the Lutheran Church hurt me, diminished me, made me feel terrible, made me less of a person. You know, if we're supposed to not hide our light under a bushel, then my attending church was a sin, because it was so bad for me, and it hurt me so much. Then, actually, through experience at Holden Village in worship, I began to be reconciled to the church. I think all through that period, I was a Christian. I was a spiritual person, but I was blocked. I couldn't see my way into an organized church body, because it was just, my every contact with the church was turned out to be negative. And really, Holden Village, my experience here has been the healing and reconciling kind of force that gives me hope in my church. I'm not pleased with how the Lutheran Church is now. I have one little example of that is when the new church was formed 6 years ago, I attended the installation of the bishop. It was in Chicago, and I live in Chicago. And so I went to a huge arena at University of Illinois where this was going to happen and looked for my husband and friends and couldn't find them, so I sat by myself. And sitting there watching the processional of this new church in which I had much hope, it was all men, all white and all dressed in black, and it looked so alien from my dreams and hopes of this church that I sat and wept as the processional happened. It was so painful to see the failure of my hopes and dreams, thinking that this church was going to be reflective of all of creation and including me. But then the gift came from God, and Chrissy Grum, who was a friend of mine and who was the vice president of the church, came in the processional. And she elected, in fact, she refused to wear a black robe, I learned later. And she had on a purple dress with a red festoon with a red, a thing like this, and had her hair piled high on her head. And, you know, she looked like a ship of state. She was so beautiful and dignified and strong looking. And I found myself smiling through my tears. And I thought, okay, I'll stay for one more day. This is what I've got, what I need today to stay in the church. So my relationship with the church is quite mixed and negative in many ways, and that persists to this day. But I still stay. But I feel, because of that, I feel freed in a way to politically move within the church in a way that makes me probably stronger. Because when I got asked to be on this national board because they had someone drop off it right at the beginning. And they needed someone, and I was in Chicago, and it was sort of handy, and I knew the person who was finding people to be on the board. So I went, and my first meeting, I went because of the principle of inclusivity. And politically, I think that's really important. I was part of a group of people that fought for principles of inclusiveness in the new church. And that meant that there were supposed to be 15% people of color or language other than English, and there were supposed to be approximately half women and half men on all boards and in all governance structures. And that's still controversial. There are still memorials coming toward this next Synod Assembly against the principles of inclusivity. But because of those principles, now there are all kinds of people on these boards. They're not just pastors, they're not just men, they're not all white. So the boards, when you look around the room of governance structures of the ELCA now, you see a wide variety of kinds of people, just like we see in the rest of the world. And it, for me, it's very, very nourishing. It's very wonderful. And so they had to have a woman and a layperson, and they got me. And then I went in there and I thought, I've got nothing to lose because I'm so disaffected from this church already. But on the other hand, it's my church. I'm a Lutheran. It's my church. If this church doesn't meet my needs, then it's still my church, and it's my place to try to make it responsive to me and people like me. At one point I got another gift, I think, which was a sense that I'm being kicked out of my church because I can't stand it. And I don't have to do that. I can stay. And I don't have to change. I can stay and be me in my church. And then it will be my church. And I think that was a real revelation. And so when I went to my first board meeting, I was able to go in there with a real free sense that I could be me. And that somehow, maybe even the hand of God was at work here. The people like me suddenly were invited into this church, into the governance structure. And so I went, and one of the first votes we had to take was a vote on affirming board members of a Lutheran hospital, and all the suggested board members were white men, and I just raised my hand. And I said, is anybody else bothered by the fact that there aren't any people of color on the board of this hospital? Which is in the middle of a city where there are lots of people of color. Many of their clients are black. And also, there are no women on it. And everybody kind of looked around the room like, is it okay for her to be asking this question? And several very powerful white men who, you know, were people who were on these Lutheran hospital boards and were heads of Lutheran social service agencies, started shifting in their chairs like they thought, oh dear, we knew it was going to come to this. There's going to be, now that you've let everybody into these boards, there's going to be all this problem and these questions. And And people are going to start to wonder why hospital boards are all white and all men and things like that. But there was much responsiveness. And in fact, the people on the board were universally caring Christian people who received my question as a gift and didn't just go, can we get her out of here? Can we hush her up? But in fact, people wanted to serve their church in the right way. And we all help each other do that. And each of us brings our gift, just like we do at Holden Village. When we disagree with each other here, it's our gift to the village to express our disagreements. And the same is true on that board. And I find that they're wonderful people on the board, and they all care. And each of them comes out of their tradition as I come out of mine. So I may come in there the most disaffected person, and maybe the most blunt, and least willing to go with the flow, but they accept me. And they figure that that's another one of the gifts that comes into this room. And maybe the hand of God is at work with all of our presence there. So that's that was my the sort of key that freed me to be politically active in the church and to be more comfortable with the church as a place to do good work and a place where it mattered whether or not good work went on. So that's one little preface about this whole, the work of this church. Well, then they elected me chair, so now I'm doing that. What I would like to know from you, before I get into a real sort of unpacking of the work of this particular division, which is very controversial work, as we said, is I'd like to know what you think about what the church's job is in our world today. What's appropriate? What's right? If you were to design a church from scratch now, I mean, I thought today, let's just throw out, what are some of the things that we're told by Jesus are appropriate for our church to do and be?
Get out of that building that you call a church and get with the people mm-hmm. who are around it.
That comes out of the Bible.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Maybe it's my feeling.
Sounds good to me. what are some things that come to mind when you think about church and society that we've been told and we think is true out of the Bible? Which sayings of Jesus, parables, stories of Jesus? Why do we think about it at all? Why don't we just worship and have our own spirituality and spiritual growth? Why do we concern ourselves with church and society, doing things in society for other people?
Passage out of Matthew maybe about Jesus being in the least of our brethren, or
even if as you've done it unto the least of these my brethren, you've done it unto me.
I mean, that's certainly a call to. Yeah, the church to open your door to whoever out there.
Yeah, right. So the most repulsive homeless person is Jesus. We're doing it to Jesus. Mm-hmm. Or the most needy or needy people. So that's a clear direction. What are some others?
I guess just in order to love one another, I think you have to move beyond the walls of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And things like feeding the hungry and giving the poor and helping people and loving people so that they can be people.
Mm-hmm. I made a list at one point of the people that we're supposed to reach out to that I could think of that Jesus had talked about. Prostitutes, tax collectors, the hungry, women, children. Can't read my next one. It's too dark in here. Rebels, centurions, Samaritans, the sick, demon-possessed. It's the demon, in the streets of Chicago, it's the demon-possessed that I have the hardest time with. People who are acting crazy, I just don't want to be nice to them. But Jesus talks to us about that in the Bible. And a lot of love, faith is works in love. Serve one another. Walk by the Spirit. It seems like the Bible is pretty clear about us doing stuff in society, not just limiting ourselves to what goes on within the four walls of the church on Sunday morning, or sort of our spiritual development through Bible study, or reading the Bible, or prayer. So then if we feel that as Christians, part of our job is to have works in love, then what would be appropriate for the church to do? What wouldn't be? What would you say a church that we would design around the table today would do in society? What should it do?
I think it should advocate for people who have needs. You know, and there's many ways of advocating. Part of it is politically, part of it is individually.
So you think it'd be okay for the church to, say, write to Congress people and try to get them to pass good legislation? Or to advocate in a situation where a school, a college, only admits students who can pay, that you would advocate for people who can't, or in the name of your faith?
I think that we have to do that, because I mean, I hear concerns within our own church, and I come from a very old Lutheran congregation in Seattle, and many people that say, you know, no, we shouldn't be involved in those things, because, you know, we just need to do our own thing as the church, and we can help people out, but we shouldn't do political stuff. We don't belong there.
Right.
But
that's certainly how my
everybody else has their own ideas, and it may not be called a church, but people are out there advocating for what they think they need to advocate for, and we need to do the same thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think there's some difficulty when maybe the church is advocating as calling it the entire church, and we're the church, and I think some of the difficulties when people say, this is what the church says, and people say, well, that's not what I believe. And I think there's some difficulties there, and I don't know how we work with those things. Mm-hmm. But I think that, especially as people of the church, we have to do that. Mm-hmm. We have to.
Is there anybody who has a different position or who wants to add to that? What about?
I'd like to put an emphasis on your last point. And just how easy it is to alienate people with such a broad statement by the church. We might find it more on a local level, the encouraging of people to take political action. The church doesn't need to necessarily have this statement, this is what the church believes on abortion or on homosexuality or on this particular legislation or this particular college, but to encourage the people to make their statement out of their faith on the local level.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're able to include the views. But one limit you have to put on such action is that the action has to be out of the love that Christ talks about for one another. And to evaluate such a statement of a local church and say, does this follow the teachings of Jesus? And if it doesn't, then maybe such action can be limited in some way. But to free the people to have their voice heard in their faith is certainly a very powerful way that the church nationwide can make a statement through the local ones.
What if the local level is just unconscious of a problem? Which is often the case. I mean, those of us who are going along in our white middle class lives often don't even see that we are not being inclusive or that we are not addressing the problems of our neighbors or that we're not being responsible for.
Well, isn't that what your board is doing, is putting together these statements to let folks know about issues? But what the statements, while they're informative, they don't leave a place for action for these people who it doesn't apply to, or who
does apply to, and there's no guidance on, okay, well, this is what we think. Good luck.
It's real difficult, I think. I think you're pointing to a real serious problem. I remember when I was in graduate school, a friend of mine needed an abortion, wanted an abortion, and asked me for help. And I felt unguided by my church. I felt unhelped. I felt there was a vacuum there. I didn't feel my church had anything to say to me, which was a crisis for me. So in a way, I want the church to be thinking about these things and struggling with the issues, and I want the church to help me think about them and struggle with them. I think answers is probably not the thing we want, but we want help thinking. And then from our thinking, we have to make our best judgments about what we do. But the abortion thing for me has always been very personal, because as a woman, I hear about people who need and want abortions and think it's important to have abortions regularly, and I need to have something to say. I need to be able to respond with some depth of thought. And you know, not all of us are theologians. So I think we do need our church to come through for us in some way. I mean, end-of-life issues, the church, our unit just put out a statement on end-of-life issues 6 months ago, because the hospitals and nursing homes were clamoring to the church saying, tell us what to think about this, help us. We have to deal with it every day with people who are dying. And we need guidance. We don't just want to know what the medical profession has to say about this. We want to know what the church has to say about it.
I'm going to catch on to something you just said there, because you said two different things. You said guidance, and then one, tell us. The church really needs to work as a guidance, not as a tell us what to do. I think that's where the danger is going to come.
Mm-hmm.
When such a thing is said, this is what the church says, and you do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then these hospitals will say, oh, okay. That's not getting us anywhere. If we put the guidance in there and says, here are some perimeters which are in the Bible. Here are some thoughts about what we're dealing with in society and how it relates. The church may suggest that this is the best way, but recognizes there's not simply one solution to every possible problem that arises.
Mm-hmm.
And that it requires people to think about the situation and not a dictation of, here, it's what to do.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, nursing homes and hospitals who have experience and who have to make decisions every day would have to make those decisions and go with it, but I think their deliberations can be aided by theologians pulling stuff together to say, these are some of the questions, and these are some of the things people have said about this. What about the, now still building a dream church?
I agree with him. We got to remember the Lutheran Church does not issue people bulls or have a college of cardinals to directors.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about the background of those statements? Because I've read some of them, and I think they are thought-provoking. They're not, the ones I've read, I don't take them as directives.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is difficulty when a person reads those and doesn't necessarily agree with those.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, my impression is the intention is not that everybody's to agree. It's just to provide some guidance, and that at some point the church decides that the church should take a position, but there's an understanding when those positions are developed that that's not necessarily a position of every individual in the church.
Right. The two Commission for Church and Society and the Division for Social Ministry Organizations combined 2 years ago into one unit, And the thought was that the work of the Commission for Church and Society, which writes those statements, would be helped by having the rubber hitting the ground in the division, in the DSMO, social ministry organizations, so that the practice and the theory would come together in one place and those people would talk more, so that the writing of statements will be enhanced by the experience of the people who are having the experiences. The writing of statements is in part based on predecessor church bodies. It's based on the old statements of the ALC and the ELCA and the AELC. And so, for example, the statement on race, ethnicity, and culture, we put out a study document for feedback, and included in that was a social statement on that subject from each of the two predecessor bodies, and they're here. And then we got feedback. We asked parishes to do it. We asked people who were specifically involved in race, ethnicity, and culture ministry to give us feedback. We had a team of, I think, 25 people who flew into Chicago over 2 years' time, I think maybe six times, to work on writing the statement. And they were all people who had a stake in it somehow. And then once they've gotten the feedback from all the arms of the church that are involved in this area, and they had all of them representing different points of view had their say, then another statement was written, modified after this 2-year process, and then that was put through out onto the highways and byways, and feedback was given to that. It was modified again. It came to the board. The board modified it. It sent it back to the committee. Then the committee sent it back to the board. So we did the best we could in terms of getting experts, getting many different points of view represented on a committee in the same process that I'm describing as the process we're going through currently on the sexuality statement, that we've gone through on the environmental statement, that we're starting on the abortion statement. You know, there's a set of statements that are in the pipeline, and they each take 4 to 6 years. Then finally, the board passes it. The board, in the case of race, ethnicity, and culture, the board just passed it a couple months ago, and it was sponsored by not only our board, but it was in collaboration with the board of the Commission for Multicultural Ministries. And so it was presented and affirmed by both boards. Then it will go to churchwide assembly this summer for vote. That's the process that they'll all go through. But when people write to us and say, well, you can say all you like about race, ethnicity, and culture, I disagree with the statement, then it is written into the foundation documents of the church that every Christian individual has the right and the obligation to make up their own mind about things. So that although this statement is put out as a statement of the church and by the church, it's not a papal writ, it's not a rule, but it's the best thinking and best work that the church could produce in a reasonable amount of time and money and energy in these times, in the 90s. Assuming that it's complex and that things change. I mean, we're still using foundational statements for a few things that were written in the 60s. And 70s, and things have changed, and you read them now and you say much of this rings true, but some of it changes. So it's not like the Bible. It doesn't sort of stand for all time, but it's doing the best we can in a complicated world. And you think what you're writing should be, because it's being written by and for the church, it should stand forever and ever and be somehow blessed with truth and clarity and freedom from ambiguity. But it's not. And the truth of that is brought home when you look back at old statements by the old ALC or ELCA or, I mean, AELC or...
LCA.
It's sort of good that all those old bodies are becoming more and more lost in the chance of time. Although we all know what we were, right? So that's the process. And then the other kind of thing that the board does is, well, there are many other kinds of things that the board does, but one of them is we take positions regularly on public issues. Like, we just passed a position that writes lobbying letters almost every day. I get copies of them, and I get maybe one or two a day copies of the lobbying letters written by, in the name of the Lutheran Church, to the Congress, to our senators and congresspeople. And so our unit keeps working on, in conjunction with other units in the church, we keep working on trying to figure out what we think about things, partly because we don't want the Lutheran Church to be just irrelevant. And we think we have a sort of moral position. For example, we're writing a lot of letters right now on sort of issues of freedom of religion. And how that plays out right now is that Native Americans want to use peyote in some religious services. Now, I don't want peyote legalized. You know, I don't want my teenagers to think they can use peyote. But on the other hand, I don't want to give up wine in communion services. And if somebody else's religious services call for peyote and mine calls for wine, I don't want either of those freedoms abridged. So I think the fact that our Lutheran Office of Governmental Affairs is writing to our congresspeople saying don't abridge religious freedom is a good thing. We passed the statement on the health care reform, and we're advocating for one part of the argument in Washington, D.C. about health care reform. It seems sort of scary, you know, does the Lutheran Church know what it's doing when it's doing this? But we can be the best we can be. I mean, we can look at, it's all based on either statements that have been approved by Churchwide Assembly for this church or based on predecessor church statements. And those are grounded in the gospel. So our church is active in society on the political and governmental level in ways that I never realized before. I had no idea that we were doing this kind of work, but we surely are. We passed something about a year ago on the board that created a lot of anger, and we got lots of letters about the budget. And the position the church took was that the budget, maybe it was just, it's I think since Clinton was elected, so it was more recently than a year. We took the position that the budget should not cut social services to people. And that if that meant we shouldn't develop a budget that reduced the deficit, so be it. We had to continue as a government funding social services. Now that really got the hackles of some Lutherans up around the country. But we took that position. I mean, all we can do is do the best we can do as 21 people on the board. We study it, we talk about it, we debate it, we hear what staff has prepared for us, we read that before we arrive at board meetings, we struggle with it at board meetings, and then we do our best judgment. And I suppose it's a fallible system, but it's the system we've got. I suppose people who don't like the outcome of those things should really struggle to try to get on board so that they can be heard. And, you know, our board, the Church and Society Board, has been really disagreeing with the pension board within the church, because the pension board didn't want to have any social screens on investments of pension monies. So they wanted all the pension money to support whatever made the best return on the investment. And if that meant investing in the war machine, or what we're currently doing is investing in cigarettes, which just burns the eye. Yes. The pension, church's pension money is in all those cigarette people in North Carolina, because it pays a good return on the pension money. And the pension board, which is all bankers and people who are real good at money, say that they would be liable for suit if they didn't invest the church pension money into whatever gave the best return. Well, now finally, there has been a compromise made, and the compromise that after real serious battles and anger and threats of lawsuits and stuff, now there is a, now you can elect, if you have church pension money, if you're a pastor or someone who has got pension money in the church, you can elect to have your money invested in the socially screened fund. Or you can have it be in the other fund. And in fact, the socially screened fund is supposed to be the norm, the normative fund, and you have to tell them if you want to be in the fund that isn't socially screened. But somehow they've got that sort of twisted around so that they still have everybody in the non-screened fund, and something like 15% of the money is in the socially screened. So you, as a personal person with your conscience, can decide, I don't want my money supporting cigarette companies in the war machine, so I'm going to go into the screened one, or not investing money in South Africa until they tell us they want us to. But it's a small portion of the money that's doing that. But in fact, that fund is doing better. The screened fund is currently doing better than the other one. So I think that's sort of nice.
How often does the board meet?
My board meets twice a year for 3 years. This fall we're going to meet 4 days. But it's usually Thursday late afternoon to Sunday noon or something. We always stay over Saturday night so we don't cost the church more money. And we've become very cost conscious so that we almost always meet in Chicago because statistically we've worked out it's the cheapest place to meet. Because the staff is already there and people don't, it's central, so people can fly into Chicago cheaply. We like to meet on location because so much of our work is in social service. So before the funds were so diminished, we've had to cut our budget every year for 6 years now. 6 years ago we started at one level and every single year it's gotten less because there's less money coming from the synods to the central church. So we're cutting out programs and we're cutting out feeding people and, you know, taking care of people after tornadoes and cutting out service, significantly cutting back service to refugees and immigrants that the Lutheran Church has done historically because there's less and less money. So people are sort of electing to spend their money locally and take care of local food pantries or, you know, just do their social service on local levels, parish by parish, and not send their money to the central church to do stuff that the central church can do, like respond to the crisis in Florida after the hurricane, or respond to boat people who come in, you know, from wherever they come from, starving to death. But the national church, because our budget is shrinking every year, we're just cutting out good program after good program. Board meetings are really depressing because of that, because you know all the wonderful work that's going on that you have to stop doing. We've stopped doing braille services for the blind. We've stopped doing, I just can't think of all the things, but it's really sad. And it makes me think that people in the pew don't know what the church is doing in their name. They don't know and take pride in the fact that the Lutheran Church is coming through for all these people because they don't seem to want the money to come to the church to continue doing that.
Or
they don't feel it individually.
I don't think people do know. I think in a lot of cases, at least I get the impression just from people that I've talked to that they don't know what the National Church does.
I think that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to address that.
Like I have a friend that's working at the Lutheran Office for Governmental Affairs, and I was telling some people, and they're like, oh, I didn't know there was one. I mean, mm-hmm. People don't know what the church does, and I'm wondering if there's some sort of way that publicity could occur so that people have a better sense of these processes that you're talking about and what really happens mm-hmm. at the national level.
That's a really serious problem. People don't feel ownership on the national church. Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't before I started doing work in it. I mean, we do have a video thing that we send out, and we have, of course, the Lutheran, and we have the Seeds of the Parish, and we have, there are different vehicles, although even those have been cut back because of the cutbacks in the budget. But anyhow, we used to meet as a board, we used to meet on location of one of our social service delivery systems once a year, and then in the national office once a year. So we would go, we went to Phoenix one year and met with all kinds of social service things there. We had all our meals served by Vietnamese refugees and Native Americans, and we stayed in a motel that was run by totally by disabled people that was sponsored by the Lutheran Church there. It enriched our sense as a board of the kind of work the church is doing. Another time we went to Nebraska and were hosted by a Lutheran hospital there, and we learned all about what the hospital does, and we turned around and kind of gave it to them because it was in a neighborhood in a city there that had lots of people of color, but they didn't have any people of color on the staff in this Lutheran hospital. So we started asking questions, and we wrote them a letter and protested. You know, so there's a lot of good that comes from meeting on location, but it costs too much, so we're not doing it. So it's really, the budget is really the problem.
I'd like to ask you, explaining the process, and it stopped once it was elected to the, by the national church. What happened after that to those documents?
Once the churchwide assembly affirms them, then they mostly go in file cabinets, I think. I think they all get sent out to parishes. They all certainly are sent to synod offices, and I think every parish gets any document that's passed by the national churchwide assembly.
What are they supposed to do with it?
I would think use them for teaching documents. Like the even the sexuality study, which is not a document, it's not a position of the church, but it's a study document that is designed for to elicit controversy and discussion and get people thinking about these issues. That was expected to be used for churches for study, for people to debate these issues and discuss them and think about them and read scripture and see what we can think about, whatever the issue is. And I would hope that the one on race, ethnicity, and culture would be used that way, and the one on the environment. Because it does, like for adult Sunday school in churches, they're wonderful. If you do the environmental statement, I mean, I never thought of the environment as being a particularly Christ-centered issue until I went through some of the study around it and realized that Christ feels very strongly about the environment and that care of creation is something we should make our business. And so then my parish should recycle, you know, and should think about what it purchases. And, you know, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, should the Lutheran Church take a position on the environment, I wouldn't have thought so. But I think that's a document that should be used by parishes for study.
My question is studying the document enough?
Well, the document points you to scripture.
Right, but we're still studying it there. There's nothing in that document which demands of those people studying it, now go out and do what you just learned.
Well, I think there is.
It's certainly not happening.
Didn't you just say we shouldn't tell people what to do?
Do what they learn. This document comes to them, and now they have a chance to study it. And then it goes back into the file cabinet.
No, you must not be a teacher. I'm a teacher, and I just believe that if I raise people's consciousness and give them information, they'll make the right choices and do the right things.
Our parish uses those as discussion points in adult education, and it has a great effect on people. And I guess you have to start somewhere, don't you? So why not start everybody who is aware, do make more people aware, and it's a growing thing. Little things count.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that with that homosexuality book. We've used it in our church here,
sure.
But last summer we were in Tucson at our old church, and they, for some reason, the issue had come up. I can't remember why. And they were talking about starting a study on homosexuality, but I don't really think that many of those people in that church actually knew anyone who was gay or who was homosexual. And so it seemed like to talk about it without actually being exposed to it, like you say, is really a problem. You know, and so I think there needs to be both sides of that.
Every single person in that church knows someone who's gay or lesbian.
Right.
They just don't know that they are.
Right. Right.
And that's one of the things they should learn from that document. And also the fact that the document is being talked about publicly in a church, we hear all the time that makes space for gay and lesbian people to come out in the church. And so some change just by having it be a public discussion sometimes occurs. And certainly in people's own family lives and among their friends, it would change the way they would react if someone came out to them and their family or among their friends. I think it would. I just have so much faith in people and in education that I always assume that the more people know, the better in terms of their reaction to the vicissitudes of life.
Is this the acquiring of that knowledge enough. Mm-hmm. I don't think that someone just knows, oh, the church says this, and well, that kind of makes sense to me. So what? So the person knows now. What is there that says, okay, now let's do something with this knowledge and say, here's a way where you can step out into race and ethnicity and say, this is one way you can bring them in.
These documents always give directions. They tell people what they should do, more than I think they should, almost. Because I say, you can't say that the National Church is telling every parish to do such and such, and they say, why not?
But so it says, you...
Under worship and education, in the caring for creation, vision, hope, and justice, it has a whole section, section 5, the last section, it is the commitments of this church. In hope, we celebrate the vision of our faith and commit ourselves anew to care for the earth with justice in this time of great environmental urgency. We believe that as we renew our minds and hearts, we must also reform our habits and our institutions. We must take on new responsibilities and support new forms of advocacy. And then it goes on and talks, section A is worship and education. Creating creation awareness centers, creation emphasis in the church year, new resources, educational programs throughout the church are the four sections. Then section B is personal change. We ask individual members of this church to commit to the styles that contribute to the health of the environment. Let us settle for nothing less than a conversion to a new way of living in justice with the creation. Let us pray ceaselessly for wisdom, courage, and activity. Now I said, we're supposed to ask people to pray ceaselessly? People don't have time. But the board said we have to say this. And then they have sections. The environmental crisis warrants. One, working to restore the atmospheric balance, etc. And it just goes through and tells what we want individuals to be doing. Three, institutional modeling, or C, talking about recycling and congregations. We will move as congregations and other institutions of this church from increasing our awareness and appreciation of creation to practicing and modeling sound environmental stewardship. As a church, we will avoid waste, recycling, reducing, and reusing. We will budget and invest our resources in ways that show care for the earth. We will bring environmental concerns to the ways we invest church funds. We will undertake environmental audits and follow through with biennial checkups to ensure our continued faithfulness. The fourth one is our witness as advocates. I'm talking about being advocates, and that's quite a long section. So, it's pretty directive.
I haven't seen that document. The one I have looked at is the rate that ethnicity rates.
That hasn't been published.
I was looking at it at the Synod Convention, the Northwest Synod. We were looking at that document as a study. And the fear for that one, too, even that creation, I haven't seen that document, and to know if the purpose of the document is to raise knowledge and to begin that discussion, it's lacking there. There too, we have to make it more demanding that such topics be talked about.
Well, at the end of Race, Ethnicity, and Culture, it's got doing justice is the final section. One, a time for public leadership, and it goes through and unpacks that. Two, a time for public witness. Three, a time for public deliberation. Four, a time for advocacy. And under advocacy, it says, we will support legislation that guarantees all persons equally, one, civil rights, including full protection of the law and redress under the law of discriminatory practices, and to all citizens a right to vote, two, access to a quality education, health care, and nutrition, three, opportunity for employment with fair compensation and possibilities for job training and education, apprenticeship, promotion, and union membership, four, opportunity for business ownership, five, access to legal, banking, and insurance services, six, right to rent, buy, and occupy housing in any place, and seven, access to public transportation and accommodation.
maybe I'm asking the wrong question.
To ask the church to take leadership in advocating for racial justice, talks about how to do that.
What I hear you saying, and I might be on the wrong frequency here, but I have those same feelings about the written word information coming to the church. And it sounds good, but then nothing changes after it's been spilled out to the mm-hmm. congregation. And it finally dawned on me that there has to be a thorn in somebody's side. And that's where the flesh, it has to have some flesh to it. And so I have somebody that's a self-starter that is so inspired by it that they start changing, because I don't think people just change accidentally. There has to be an intentionality there. And I know that I was writing about the styrofoam cups, for instance. And I don't know, I think I got enlightened out here a while back. And finally, I saw it happen all the time, and throw away stuff, So I started bugging people, and pretty soon they were kind of kidding that, you're the purist or whatever you're, And so I said, let's have an environmental fair some Sunday morning. So, and in our church we have three services, it's a fairly good sized one. And so I went out on my own and searched for people that were in certain fields. And even if they weren't a real militant environmentalist person, we got a fair down there. And it's just surprising what has changed in our church. Just one of those. And and I try to get people saying, but all these issues, like I heard on the speaker, I'm Kate Minister here, so, but about gay lesbian, and that's a subject that our church won't touch with a 10-foot pole yet. But I'm keeping on bugging.
Did you know about the documents that the church has put out, and mm-hmm. were you able to use them and access them?
I think that our church sometimes doesn't take those because they're too controversial for some of our conservative members. Mm-hmm. And
my church is very 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 conservative. It's a working class Chicago neighborhood. It's almost all white. We did a gay and lesbian series in adult Sunday school, in the adult forum on Sunday mornings, and at the end of 4 weeks. We didn't become a Reconciled in Christ parish, but people really changed. They really opened up and mellowed and began to see that this was something they better think some more about. So I think you can just do what you can do, but that you have to do on the local level. Mm-hmm. The national church has no way of conducting a huge campaign to get every parish to, take seriously the ideas that it's talking about. But the parishes that are, because of activists on the local level, interested in thinking about some of these issues, at least have some resources put out by the church. The church doesn't have money to take a baseball bat to the national media or to all parishes or something and try to force them to do something, even if they would want to do that. But I think it is, I also think that for people like me, who are sort of on the left wing of the church, to have the church making inclusive, thoughtful statements about sexuality or about people of color or about the environment makes me feel like I belong in the church and the church belongs in me. I mean, I think it makes some of us feel like we're more at home there because we find our church reflecting the gospel in ways that intersect with society in ways that seem reasonable. So the church isn't turning a blind eye to the problems of society.
That's something.
Yes, Sal, you may.
This is all local churches. We're doing our part. But the global effort is much, much bigger, and we're not going to get very far unless we have the global people get going and do their part. Like the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
inclusion.
So it's a big problem, and I think the church can take public positions on that too, to try to force our government to enter into a compliance agreement with Canada, for example, to stop polluting the Great Lakes, or to stop doing whatever creates acid rain. So it is a global problem, but again, the church doesn't have to just buy out of it because of that.
Yeah. There's another great thing that I think lots of ELC people don't realize, especially if they came from the ALC part, and that's, I think that's a real gift that we got from the LCA, was the Global Mission Event.
Yeah.
And that that is more local. You know, people don't have to travel so far, let's say, if you're living east of here, to be exposed to so many different subjects.
Yeah, that's right. That is a wonderful event. So are there any more last words or comments, questions?
I just have a question. When statements are published, I mean, just as an example, you talked about, you just recently come up one on end-of-life issues.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just some... How do people in the congregations hear about those? Is it a matter of the pastor that gets those lets us know, or is it written in the Lutheran? Or, I mean, I think that there's a lot of, it sounds like there's a lot of neat information that would really help us, but
I think it almost, I would guess that it's always written in the Lutheran, but you've got to read the news and notes portion of the Lutheran, or the whatever it is, keeping you up to date on the awards.
Is that where it is? It's kind of in...
It, I think it's mentioned there if we publish anything. And then your pastor has to let you know. We also have, I think that there may be a... I mean, there's all these resources. This is just some of it. But I think that the church, we have an ELCA's Division for Church and Society, in which we list all of the work that we do and who is in charge of each portion of the work and who to write to. So, you know, we have that kind of information for our unit, and I think most units must have some systematic way of talking about what resources they have in terms of their responsibility. We have administration, age span ministries, board development services, community development, which board development services are a wonderful resource. We can help people in Lutheran social services or in hospitals and stuff in their local areas with board development materials. How do you get a good board for your social service agency that does whatever it does? Community development services, thinking that economic development is, it's like the old adage about give a man a fish and he can eat for a day, teach a man to fish and he can, or a woman, and they can eat for a lifetime. Community Development Services uses hunger money to develop stuff in communities so that people can make a living. Now, so that's very controversial with some people. They think that's a waste of the church's funds. But the hunger people know that that's the best way to alleviate hunger. Corporate social responsibility is, well, it's a very small budget now, so it does less, but it tries to get the ELCA to be socially responsible in a variety of ways with its corporate funds. Disability ministries, domestic disaster response. We didn't get publicity for all the work we did in Florida, but we did a tremendous amount of work. For some reason, we weren't on the list of the national news services as people to interview after the Florida disaster. But we have now corrected that. So the next time there's a disaster, you will see Lutherans being quoted. Environmental stewardship and hunger education, health ministries, leadership development has a lot of good resource material too for local parish leadership development. Long-term care and housing ministries, which is again like nursing homes. Lutheran Office for Governmental Affairs, Lutheran Office for World Community, Peace Education. We have a wonderful Peace Education department with great resources on peace. Social Ministry Organization Support. So over in there, we have every region has support people staffing that for all the social ministries. State Public Policy Advocacy. So we try to implement policy.